The Me Too movement has reminded us that harassment and violence against women is endemic and no one's immune, no matter how young, old, rich, poor or educated you are. But how do our ideas about gender affect that environment? And how can men be part of this discussion and help enact meaningful change? For many years, Phil Barker wrote a column in Fairfax Media called Life on Mars about the issues facing men and women today. Coincidentally, he's now written a book called The Revolution of Man. And have you started seeing the men around you doing things differently? Are there new ways to be a man now? You can get in touch on our Facebook page. Phil Barker, welcome to you.
Hi, Hilary. How are you?
Well, now, you grew up in New Zealand in the 70s. What kind of men and behaviour were you surrounded by at that time?
Well, there was so much manliness around the place that I had to wear special boots just to stomp around in it. It was definitely a very sort of male-driven strength, stoicism meant everything. There were a lot of very tough boys down in the south of New Zealand in the 70s, let me tell you. But I was lucky, and as I've been saying in the media that I've been doing, that my father particularly was a very soft man and is still to this day, and didn't drive that sort of thing very hard, which was lucky for me as a young chap. So, you know, coming home was always in the end a very, very safe environment for those sorts of pressures, but they were outside, that's for sure.
And you've written about hanging out with the shearers on the farm and hearing some things about manhood that maybe might have been a bit confusing for a little boy.
No, it wasn't confusing. It was actually incredibly exciting to be, you know, I was madly aspirational to the big, tough men in my life. So to hear the sort of secret stuff about, you know, drinking and women and stuff like that they were talking about was incredibly interesting and exciting for me. And I just couldn't wait.
Now, you've also written about seeing one of the older boys break out of the mould a bit, someone you played rugby with. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, look, this is just one little story that illustrates, I think, what a lot of people feel. And, you know, I felt the same thing. Playing rugby union at any decent level is actually a quite physically painful thing. And you know, it was very cold and dark down there, and the actual ground was frozen that day, so it would cut you as well. So we were just after we had been playing, talking, and he became quite emotional and said he didn't like it, but he sort of basically had no choice but to go ahead and keep doing it, and he didn't like hurting himself or other people really. So, you know, instead of putting my arm around him and comforting him and thinking and you know, saying to him, oh mate, look, you know, it's not that bad, you don't have to keep doing it, I couldn't get away fast enough for a number of reasons. I couldn't believe that someone could walk away from the most sanctified thing about manhood, which was, you know, success in sport. Just if any of the, you know, inverted commas, pussy or gayness rubbed off on me, that would have been terrible. So I had to get away from that. And I don't mean gayness in terms of sexual orientation. I mean gay in the way that our masculinity is policed. And that word is used a lot to police masculinity.
You write some really interesting stuff in the book about that idea of gayness not being about whether or not you like men, but about something quite different. Can you go into a bit more detail about that?
Yeah, the whole book is based on research. I'm a journalist originally, so I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I don't want to be saying my opinion about anything. I want to be sort of shining some light on the science behind what we're talking about. This particular thing that we're talking about is from a book called Dude, You're a Fag, and a woman, forgotten her name at the moment, who wrote the book, it'll come back to me, Pasco was her last name, she spent a year in a high school in the US, interviewing young men. So there was three or four young gay men in the school. Two of them presented overtly as very masculine, played football, had short haircuts. No one gave a stuff about their sexuality. The young men that had long hair and liked to, you know, dance and wear dresses and all that sort of stuff were absolutely smashed, and their lives were ruined by that masculine culture. But the young gay men that presented as you know, tough and big and all of those things were, you know, slipped through relatively unscathed.
And you cite some really terrifying research too, a 2017 study about the kinds of lasting damage that these rigid gender norms can have on kids. Could you tell us a bit about that?
I think the best study about what it means to be a man is the Harvard Study of Human Development. It is 80 years old. It's the longest longitudinal study of its type in the world. It hasn't fallen over like studies like this do because of lack of funding or lack of interest or the university's, you know, charter changes or whatever. This has just gone straight through with four directors. So it's not based on memory and interview. It's based on fact derived at the time from researchers talking to these two cohorts of men. It was in Boston. JFK was one of them. And what it shows unequivocally is that the act of being a man is dangerous and not communicating properly, not having empathy, not having compassion, not having great relationships, which is the opposite of the stoicism and the toughness that we're supposed to have, will kill you as surely as a bottle of wine and a packet of cigarettes a day.
Kill you how, though?
Loneliness, sadness, you haven't, lots of reasons. We're killing ourselves at the rate of six men a day. We are killing the women at the rate of more than one woman a week in Australia through domestic violence. And that is a direct line from the act and the performance of being a man.
With us also today is Von Patiag. He's a writer, filmmaker and actor based in Western Sydney, who's part of a panel discussion next month on masculinity at the All About Women Festival. Von, welcome to you.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Good. You grew up in Western Sydney in the 90s in a really different environment to Phil's. Can you describe a little bit about your family background for us?
I grew up in the western suburbs in Blacktown, so very, very suburban. Youngest of three boys, so my older brothers were very into sport. They were kind of tennis champions, and I was really the kid who liked to dress up and write plays and perform. So I was really lucky. I guess I'm really similar to Phil in the sense that I feel like I had a very soft dad who was quite supportive of all my creative expression. But Western Sydney in general, you know, it's a lot of gym junkies, a lot of muscle cars, and we really did rely on a lot of TV and representation to see what male stereotypes we were going to turn into. So, you know, those were the 90s sort of heartthrob kind of teen soap operas who were, you know, predominantly white and predominantly male and predominantly just six-pack abs and stuff.
Like so. Brandon from 90210.
Yes.
Stuff like that.
Yes.
Wow, so really different backgrounds that you both grew up in, but the same media diet. That's a bit terrifying.
It's quite weird, actually, the two of us, such different people, such different human beings, such different ages, sitting here with such aligned thoughts and intellectual position, actually.
And I'm really interested too, Von, to find out whether there were options for you. Did you see that maybe there were ways you could be a different kind of man, or was it so clearly defined that was the only box you could fit in?
Well, I think sport, when we come back to that, was really important in the Western suburbs. And I didn't play sport at all. You know, I was more academically driven. I went to a selective school. So naturally, I did feel a bit different as a male, you know, seeing all the other guys sort of running around playing soccer and kicking a ball, and I'd just be sitting there reading a book. It did kind of make me question a lot about who I was. But I think in that same sense, that introspectiveness, I think, led to a lot of creative expression and made me really mull over a lot of these issues as well.
And you're part of the queer community, and you've directed a film about the bakla tradition in Filipino culture. That sounds fascinating. Can you describe what that is for people who haven't come across it before?
Yes. So bakla is regarded as a third gender in Philippines. It's where men cross-dress as women. They're not necessarily homosexual. They can be in relationships with men or women. It's sort of more of a cultural sexuality. And it's very interesting because bakla, the word, doesn't translate to English. But when you do bring it into the English language, people do mistranslate it as gay. So there's a really big community in Philippines and some in Blacktown as well. Yeah.
That's really interesting because it makes me think of Phil saying, you know, gender being about performance, you know, you act like a man. And you're saying that this third gender is more of a cultural practice instead of something that you innately are. It's something you choose to be or do at particular times. Do you think there's something we could learn from that?
I mean, in terms of masculinity, I do think it can be quite an intersectional issue. as well. I do find the topics of masculinity that we often talk about in Australia are very Western driven. We, you know, when we think about toxic masculinity, we kind of have the image of a white male. But there are inherent cultural, I guess, cultural associations that we can lean into. Looking at a lot of Asian cultures, not a lot of Arab cultures too, the relationships that men have in terms of their friendship, they're quite close and intimate. And it does present a different side of masculinity that is often not really seen on Australian screens.
And you met a cousin, Norman, on a visit to the Philippines and learnt something there, didn't you?
Yes, I was 8 at the time, and my cousin was a bit older, in his teens, and he just dressed up in heels and was wearing makeup, lipstick, and would wear a wig sometimes. And it was quite eye-opening because I was born in Australia, so to see that and, you know, to ask my parents about it. Even my parents were struggling to sort of define what bakla was in terms of English. And it was great. I loved hanging out with Norman. And really coming back to Sydney, you know, I tell all my male friends, and, you know, we were 8 at the time, but I just remember how ridiculed I was for having a cousin who kind of cross-dressed. So that really opened my eyes to, I guess, like the sort of difference between gender performance roles in Australia and overseas.
On Life Matters today, we're speaking with Von Patiag, who's a writer and filmmaker, and he'll be on a panel on masculinity at the All About Women Festival at the Sydney Opera House next month, and Phil Barker, who's a journalist and author of The Revolution of Man. And perhaps you've started seeing the men around you doing things differently. Are there new ways to be a man now? Get in touch on our Facebook page. Now, Phil, you've talked really powerfully in the book about how you spent your career in the media in a very blokey environment, but then you came to these realisations that you have been complicit in sexist behaviour. Maybe start with the two button rule and tell us how you came to change your thinking.
I'm a cynical old journalist, and I knew when I dropped that little anecdote into the book, I'd have to explain it again and again and again. The sad thing about that, and I'll get it to it in a moment, is that it's not particularly unusual. The corporate life, especially, you know, 15 years ago, was extremely male power driven, money driven, rough and tumble, and, you know, and I particularly enjoyed it. You know, like I'm not biting the hand that feeds me. Like as a young man, it you know, flushed with the feelings of you know, success, whatever that may mean now, but back at the time it meant something completely different to me. So the story is that I was when I was managing a large the magazine division of a large media company, I would walk out onto the editorial floor, to the sales floor at lunchtime on a Friday, and say, right, who's coming to lunch? And I'd have the sales director with me, and maybe the sales director of the whole company as well. And we'd say, you, and we would point at three attractive sales directors, female sales directors, who were, you know, overtly on the face of it seemed very happy to be chosen and come. And then you'd turn around and go, well, two button rule, and everyone knew that, and everyone would sort of laugh, and two button rule, and it meant that there had to be enough cleavage on show to make the client feel that he was in an environment that he wanted to be in. Now, I wasn't necessarily, it wasn't for me and it wasn't for those around us, but we just knew that was kind of what was required. So did the women, and it was just it was de rigueur. It wasn't even, there wasn't a moment when everyone went, you know, we're all down to HR to have a chat about it.
So Phil, you know, it must have been a pretty interesting moment for you when the Me Too stories came out and you were forced to reflect. What was that like?
I had at one stage, you know, hundreds of female direct reports to me, and you know, I've had to think long and hard about, is there anything, you know, behind me that can be construed as, that someone else might have construed as a problem, and I'm sure that there will be something somewhere that, you know, a silly, brash young media executive, you know, said something or did something that someone found hurtful that I had no idea at the time. I mean, that's how I am as a person as well. I still blunder around to this day, but it I'm happy to cop that, because I want to have the conversations about how we can change as men and what positive masculinity is. And that story for me just stands as an illustration that every man in his life will have multiple things he looks back on, multiple moments when he didn't stand up and say, that's a bad thing that you're saying to other men, when he let things slide, or he said things himself, or he was in an environment where someone else was hurt, harassed or oppressed, and just stood there and did nothing. And it's time for all of us who who you know, believe in the strength of positive masculinity to stand up and say, this is how you be a good man.
And Vaughn, I want to come back to you for a minute. I'm wondering, from your perspective in the communities you inhabit, do you think that younger men are feeling more confident these days in speaking out about the kinds of men that they want to be and the kinds of behaviours they want to see?
Yes, I definitely think looking at the queer community and especially looking at POC, people of colour, we are kind of, I guess, redefining masculinity for ourselves. I think during the Me Too movement, it kind of did put a pin in a lot of that conversation, namely just because we felt like we didn't have a space that we should be sort of encroaching on. But I think post Me Too, we're sort of able to look at how we can redefine those stereotypes of masculinity. And I think working towards being more emotional in general, I think the word vulnerable gets thrown around a lot, but I'd say more emotional, like looking at weakness, but also looking at strength through joy and happiness and sort of intimacy between friends as well. It's a very exciting time for the youth, I think.
That's fills me with hope. I'm reminded too of a fantastic quote by Steve Bidoff that's quoted in Phil's book. Toxic masculinity is neither the norm nor the default for Australian males. It's a perversion of what manhood is supposed to be. And he goes on to say that he thinks the elders need to step up. What are your thoughts on that, Vaughn? Could that be helpful?
Yes, I really did resonate with Phil's idea of the man box, especially this idea that there is a well-defined series of qualities that define a man. And especially his sort of when you were writing about what we can do to sort of redefine that,
yeah,
and look at the limits of that as well, like having men stand like with one foot outside or not.
Absolutely.
And because the more that we sort of look at those limits, the more we can...
And maybe redefine people. What those limits are and maybe put compassion and empathy and communication inside the man box, and life will be better for everyone, mate. Yeah.
And Phil, if I could finish up with you, tell us about the hopeful moments, things like Sonny Bill Williams sending out some of his messages.
Oh, look, I think there are just wonderful rays of sunshine out there in this discussion. And I think, you know, coming back to the hashtag MeToo movement really quickly, I think it's put an absolute bomb under the conversation of what it means to be a man with everything so horrible that was exposed. And we've had to have a long, hard look at ourselves. And young men are going, what does it mean to be a man? And I think that a role of positive masculinity, you know, from senior men and discussions like you, me and Vaughn are having right now are incredibly important for the future, because I think we'll look back on these times when we treated the sexes differently and be appalled at how barbaric it was, and we won't be able to explain it to our children properly. It's ludicrous.
And so you've seen things like Sonny Bill Williams, this huge, intimidating-looking rugby player, tweeting out how he was in tears on his couch for 10 minutes because he was feeling how much he loved his wife and just appreciating the things she did in the house. And for me, that was such a powerful moment in the book. I'm so glad that we got to talk to you both about it today. Thanks for appearing on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Phil Barker is a journalist and author of The Revolution of Man, a very honest, very interesting book. And Vaughn Pattiag is a writer and filmmaker. And Vaughn will be appearing on a panel on masculinity at the All About Women Festival at the Sydney Opera House next month.